everyone notice that it is a racist term, not for the Chinese.
China's growing influence worldwide is being observed with some chagrin in Western countries. And with governments choosing to dub COVID-19 the China virus, attacks on East and Southeast Asians has gone up, in the UK by 300%.
There's a bias there. And so it's a combination of things that they feel it's a small community. They feel as if they're guests. And I think the fact that for a better part of a year now, numerous Asians, and that's not just Chinese, Koreans, Japanese, Filipinos, have been getting bashed out of them because of Donald Trump's anti-Asian rhetoric.
In 2020, British media fueled anti-Asian hate by using images of East or Southeast Asian people in 33% of COVID-19 media stories, when in reality they make up less than 2% of the UK population, and nothing was done to stamp it out. Tensions ran high at Saturday's protest. The unverified word on the street is the counter-protest was funded by far-right nationalist groups who are using COVID-19 as an opportunity to promote anti-globalization sentiment and protectionist measures like closing borders. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The talks in Vienna mark a new round of negotiations between Iran and the P4+1, the group of remaining signatories to the nuclear accord after the U.S. withdrawal in 2018. The core issue for Tehran is the removal of the sanctions Washington has imposed on Iran ever since. Iran says it wants to see the sanctions removed all at once before the country returns to full compliance with its own obligations, because it was the U.S. that triggered the spiral down to the current situation by abandoning the nuclear agreement.
What is the center of focus in Vienna will be removing sanctions that have been imposed against Iran in a unilateral, extraterritorial, tyrannical, and illegal manner. The only thing that would help the U.S. is admitting that it's to blame for the current situation. It should remove the sanctions and give us a firm guarantee.
Iran says the talks can even lead to an immediate agreement. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says what the U.S. needs to do is to fully return to its obligations and walk back the sanctions in a verifiable manner. Amir Abdollahian told the European Union's foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell that sufficient and strict guarantees are also needed to ensure that a future U.S. government will not pull out of the deal again. Washington, however, has indicated that it's not ready to take those steps.
Let's see what they say when they're at the table. But obviously the indications they've given are not particularly encouraging. If those are the kinds of demands they make, that's tantamount to saying we don't really want a deal. We just want to spend the next few months building our nuclear program.
Iran began rolling back its commitments under the nuclear deal a year after the U.S. withdrawal and amid European signatories' failure to compensate for Washington's pullout. Iran originally accepted the accord's restrictions on its nuclear program in return for the economic benefits the removal of sanctions offered. However, those benefits never fully materialized due to Washington's continued pressure on Iran's potential economic partners. With sanctions back in full force under Donald Trump, Iran saw no point in unilaterally fulfilling its commitments. The country has repeatedly said even the rollback of its commitments fall strictly within the terms stated in Article 37 of the nuclear deal.
Iran has stated that if sanctions are reinstated in whole or in part, Iran will treat that as grounds to cease performing its commitments under this JCPOA in whole or in part.
Tehran says it's ready for a full return to its commitments if other signatories do the same. However, the administration of Joe Biden, who was the U.S. vice president when the nuclear deal was signed, has been dragging its feet, driving Iran to stand its ground on the outcome it wants to see out of the talks.
The All Parties Conference is convened in the commercial hub of Pakistan to condemn the UK's move of declaring Hamas a terrorist organization.
Participants of the conference stress on the need for unity among Muslims
and called on the international community to take serious notice of what they call the unilateral action of the old colonial power, the UK, who gave birth to the Zionist regime in the heart of Muslim world. The conference was organized by Palestine Foundation of Pakistan, aiming to launch further series of week-long activities across the country.
We are all very much disturbed because of the United Nations and the United States policies about the Palestine and about the Israel. Israel is killing Muslims in all over the Palestine, and they are burning the houses and the colonies of the Muslim and building up the colonies for the Jews.
It's a clear nonsense because, you know, the Hamas is the only representative of the Palestinian. All the organizations, they represented by the peoples, they do not involve in terrorism. The UK and Australian have their own terrorist organization, which was supported by UK. Our terrorists from Karachi is in UK, and they were giving the shelter to them. So this is a nonsense, and we do not accept that, and we condemned it.
The UK's move in November coincided with Balfour Declaration in 1917, when British colonial imperialist power created the Zionist apartheid.
Actually, Israel is defeating. Israel will be no more in the map of world in nearby future. So that's why their creator, especially British government and United States administration, they are worried.
Participants called on the Prime Minister Imran Khan to do more than mere condemnation of the UK's government, that instead of apologizing and correcting its historical wrongs across the world and against the Palestinian people, is supporting the aggressor both in Kashmir and Palestine. Mohammed Touri, Karachi.
The 23rd Mediterranean Exchange of Archaeological Tourism has wrapped up in Paestum, a site in central southern Italy recognized by UNESCO as part of the World Cultural Heritage. The three-day initiative aimed to promote sites and destinations of great archaeological value and increase business opportunities. Some 100 conferences and meetings took place during the international event that has seen the participation of more than 150 exhibitors from 15 countries. Syria was among them, with a stand presenting the current state of the Palmyra World Heritage Site in the Homs province after the destruction by Daesh.
In 2015, Daesh militants seized the modern town of Palmyra first and then ancient ruins nearby. The militants initially promised to leave the sites, temples, and columns untouched. However, those promises went on to be unfulfilled.
Daesh attacked Palmyra's archaeological sites with bulldozers and explosives until 2016. The region of Palmyra was then freed from Daesh by a coalition of Syrian-Russian military forces on March 24, 2016. During the Mediterranean Exchange of Archaeological Tourism, an International Archaeological Discovery Award for the most valuable discovery of the year was assigned. The award is named after Khaled al-Assad, the archaeologist of the site of Palmyra who was brutally murdered by Daesh for trying to protect the cultural heritage. Max Civili, Paestum.
In an event in the Yemeni capital Sana'a, Yemen's Prime Minister Abdulaziz bin Habtour honored the Press TV for its prominent role in standing by the Yemeni people and exposing the crimes of the Saudi led coalition since the beginning of the war.
I would like to thank Press TV and its crew for standing by the Yemeni people in the face of the war imposed on us. Press TV reveals the truth about the war that has taken place between the axis of resistance and the U.S. proxies in the region. Sana'a is just one of the front lines of this confrontation. We greatly appreciate every effort made by satellite channels that honestly expose the crimes of the Saudi-led coalition and reveal the suffering of Yemenis to the world amid the continuing war and siege imposed by Saudi Arabia.
Participants said the Press TV has always been supporting the Yemeni people and its major role is clear through its continuing existence in the field to keep pace with the advancements of the Yemeni army and the Saudi violations against Yemenis.
Press TV is one of the leading channels that serves as a role model for free media and contributes to the resistance of the Yemeni people. This channel has had a prominent impact on Yemenis by keeping pace with every event, whether the victories of the Yemeni army or the crimes of the Saudi-led coalition. So Press TV deserves to be honored and appreciated by the Prime Minister.
Since the beginning of 2015, Yemenis have been suffering under war and siege imposed by Saudi Arabia. The United Nations describes Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian crisis and says millions of Yemenis, including children, are on the brink of famine.
Observers say Saudi Arabia has used thousands of media outlets to spread its propaganda and mislead the free people of the world about its war crimes in Yemen. Therefore, as observers say, the resistance media outlets should stand together against the Saudi-led coalition media war. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Iran's representative at the International Atomic Energy Agency addresses a virtual session of the IAEA's Board of Governors. Mohammad Reza Ghaibi says the Islamic Republic's first priority at the upcoming talks to revive the nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA, will be the effective and verifiable removal of U.S. sanctions without any further delay and any preconditions.
The principal position of the new government of the Islamic Republic of Iran is that the first priority and issue that should be considered seriously into consideration is removal of all illegal sanctions imposed against Iran after the withdrawal of the U.S. from the deal.
Ghaibi said the U.S. needs to address concerns arising from its 2018 withdrawal from the agreement, the least of which is how its possible future adherence can be relied upon. Iran has also criticized European states for requesting that Tehran implement its commitments under the deal, saying that until sanctions are not removed, it's not reasonable to expect more forbearance from the country. During the previous rounds of talks on reviving the JCPOA, Iran made it clear it wanted all U.S. sanctions, including additional ones imposed under the previous administration of Donald Trump, to be removed. Up until now, Tehran says, the administration of Joe Biden has not only failed to mitigate the U.S. maximum pressure policy, but has actually exacerbated it. Delegates from Iran, the three European states of Britain, France, Germany, plus Russia and China, are expected to resume negotiations on Monday here at Vienna's Hotel Coburg, the same venue where talks to reach the nuclear agreement concluded more than 6 years ago. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah denounced Australia's decision to list the whole group as a terrorist organization, saying it was, quote, a humiliating submission to American and Zionist dictates. In a statement, Hezbollah stressed that such a move will not affect its determination to support any anti-Israeli movement.
The timing is bizarre. The only thing that points to the timing is the visit by Israeli diplomats to Australia. That means that the Australians are abiding by requests by the Israelis. That is what this decision is all about. These are the indicators. Now, what repercussions does this decision have? I think that the Australian diplomats, and let me break it out to you, the Australian diplomats have been trying in the back door to have to be in touch with Hezbollah to actually say that there are no repercussions.
Australia on Wednesday extended a pre-existing ban on the movement's armed units.
The group continues to threaten terrorist attacks and provide support to terrorist organisations. Hence my intention to list the entirety of Hezbollah.
Observers believe the United States has been exerting all efforts with its allies to demonise Hezbollah, not only in the region but across the globe.
It seems clear that the U.S. is facing a dilemma in the region, which is Hezbollah, and it is attempting to deal with this dilemma through a political course with Lebanon, in the region and beyond it. When we see that Australia takes such a decision, we can conclude that the U.S. is using all its arms and its tools in all spheres to face Hezbollah in a medium and long-term track.
Analysts agree that this comes only months preceding the Lebanese parliamentary elections in order to intimidate expats from going to the ballots, while it also puts pressure on Hezbollah's allies at home. Sources close to Hezbollah also expect to see similar moves from countries which have taken the U.S. path in their foreign policies. Hezbollah has long been targeted by the U.S., Israel, and their allies, but Hezbollah is a fully functioning political party within the Lebanese parliament and cabinet, and many fear that the recent move by Australia could impact diplomatic ties with Lebanon's government and further destabilize the country. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we're currently cruising over Iranian skies.
شهید بهشتی مسافرین گرامی خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The spotlight.
As the Iran nuclear talks with the P4+1 for removing sanctions kicked off in Vienna, Israel was on a whirlwind tour to sound the alarm about a possible deal. Its first stop was the UK. Israeli Foreign Minister Yair Lapid and his UK counterpart said that they will work night and day in preventing Iran from gaining nuclear weapons. They even published a piece in The Telegraph. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why the UK is so eager to follow Israel's demonization of Iran, especially since the UK is part of the EU and the P4+1 that's present at the sanction removal lifting negotiations. Let's get more on that first from our correspondent Rob Carter, who joins us from London. So you have Yair Lapid there, who has met with his counterpart and possibly to have met the Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Tell us what went down with the way that they were so eager together to work against Iran during this sensitive time.
Sure. Well, obviously, this is just one of a number of recent examples where the UK has sided with Israel in a very extreme way. So obviously, the UK and Israel have been allies for a very long time. In fact, if you go way back to the Balfour Declaration, the UK played a part in creating the colonialist project known as Israel as we know it today. But the fact of the matter is that the current British government that heads number 10 Downing Street is made up of one of the most pro-Zionist governments that we've seen for a number of years. Declassified UK, an independent journalism platform here in the UK, actually released an article earlier this year which found that over a third of all government ministers in this current government, including the Prime Minister Boris Johnson himself, has either received or is receiving significant finances from inside Israel, coming from various different groups, including pro-Israel lobby groups, some of which are based here in the UK. Things like the designation of Hamas's political wing as a terrorist organization is just one of the many examples of where the UK has thrown its lot in with Israel. And I think that this typical anti-Iran rhetoric, which is something that Israel favors, is just another example where the UK is trying to build on relations with this regime. Following the fact that Trump has now left the White House, it's quite possible that Tel Aviv could be offering the UK the chance to take his place as being their most chiefest of propagandists and supporters in Western circles. But that, of course, is up to discussion.
Thank you for that, Rob Carter, correspondent there from London. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Journalist and political commentator, Sayed Mohsen Abbas, joins us from London. Also joining us, journalist and author Daniel Lazar, who joins us from New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
So welcome to you both. Simas and Abbas, let me first start with you. I'm not too sure. I'm not in the legal arena here when it comes to probably one of the most important talks to take place, where you have the UK that's part of the P4 plus one that's being courted by Israel to first work against Iran, the side that it's supposed to negotiate with as part of the P4 plus one, and then for them to come out publishing something in the Telegraph and making statements against Iran, especially that it's on its path to get a nuclear weapon, etc. Isn't that illegal when it comes to the talks taking place as they are?
Well, I'm not sure about it being illegal, but it's certainly against all diplomatic and all sort of common sense norms. I mean, you do not go into a negotiation of this importance claiming that you want to come to some sort of agreement, and then go and start fraternizing openly and publicly, signing 10-year defense agreements with the chief protagonist of the very entity that you want to play some sort of diplomatic compromises with. So quite clearly, the message that the British are sending out is that we are not really taking these JCPOA negotiations very seriously at all. And I think the reason they're not taking them seriously is partly because they've never had the intention of being able to come to any really genuine settlement with Iran in terms of its peaceful ability to use nuclear power. I don't think they've ever had any intention of allowing the Islamic Republic of Iran normal economic relations with the rest of the world. And I don't think they've ever had the intention of leaving the Islamic Republic of Iran in peace since 1979, when the revolution in Iran, the Islamic Revolution, brought in a new civilizational, if you like, vision. And I think it's that which they're scared of. Ayatollah Khamenei has made it very clear in several of his statements that actually the fundamental difference and why even the JCPOA or any other agreement that the West, and particularly the Anglo-Zionist West, tries to enter into with Iran and why they can't be trusted is because they are part of a paradigm which is still rooted in oppression. They survive on the basis of oppression and plunder and looting and lies and political Machiavellian expediency and utilitarianism. How can Islamic Republic of Iran, how can an Islamic nation with the principles of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be on him, at the heart of what they do, with peaceful justice-orientated society, looking for liberty, looking for affluence and peaceful affluence, how can they ever really be expected to really be at comfort or ease with money mafia, money lenders, Zionist colonial projects, imperialists, and looters and plunderers? It's just not possible. So I think the whole thing of the JCPOA has been an unrealistic thing in the beginning, from the beginning, but it's now playing out to its final, I think, death, ultimately.
So Daniel Lazar, let's see how this looks from the outside. One of the things that I'm asking you is, as to it being a possibility, our guests there talked about it a little bit, is you have the Yair Lapid from Israel making this trip to the UK, expected to, at this point, probably to have met Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, and they're going to sign a series of agreements if they haven't already, which includes this 10-year agreement to work in things like cyber security, technology, trade, and defense. It gives this impression that you signed this with me, and look, let's work against Iran. I'm not saying this is the case, but it could be as a way to entice the UK to ramp up its anti-Iran rhetoric, especially during this time. Do you think that this could be a scenario that's being played out?
I think it definitely is, yes. I mean, I think that attitudes are hardening. Trump is essentially, I mean, Joe Biden has essentially adopted the Donald Trump point of view. He's endorsed Trump's unilateral walkout from the JCPOA in May 2018. He's not making any serious effort remotely to re-enter that agreement. And the British, after Brexit, are desperate for an ally, desperate to cozy up to the U.S., and so therefore Boris Johnson is determined to be more Zionist than thou when it comes to Israel. So I think that both states are adopting a more hawkish stance, and I think that the JCPOA is more than ever a dead letter. The Iranian government sees some advantage, evidently, in keeping the negotiations going, if only for show, but there is just any hope of any kind of a productive outcome is just fast diminishing.
So, Sayed Mohsen Abbas, when you have Iran's government spokesperson, the foreign ministry spokesperson, Khatibzadeh, say that the meeting between these two shows that the P4 plus one maybe does not want to truly lift the sanctions. And I'm going to quote him, this shows that not only are these countries not serious, but also want the talks to be lengthened, and they don't want the effective implementation of the JCPOA. I think you have said that. Do you agree with what Khatibzadeh has said here?
I 100% agree. I mean, the Iranian negotiation team now has no ambiguity. I mean, whilst under the previous government, there was some sense that they would, play some sort of compromise with these kind of Anglo-Zionist organizations and nations and institutions. I don't think there's any delusion of that now, and I think that's partly why Britain would be quite bold, because they know that they're not dealing with a foolish administration of any sorts. They know exactly what they want. The Islamic Republic of Iran knows its future lies in a Eurasian axis. If there's going to be any economic or other progress within Iran, it's going to come from the east. It's certainly not going to come from the west. So I think those delusions that may have been there have washed away. And I think what we're alluding to here in terms of the doubts which the Iranian negotiation team have expressed is that they understand that the bottom line is they cannot get any guarantees of any concrete sort either from the US or Britain or any of the others that they won't just walk out like they did before. They've got no guarantee that they won't drag out and just play politics to keep Iran on the back foot and play psychological operations against them, as they have been doing, because Britain has been part of the European game of saying that we're going to keep this thing afloat, and actually what we want is the Instex system to come in, you know, and that will be a vehicle, special vehicle, which will allow Iran to at least have basic sanctions withdrawn. None of it came to fruition. None of it. They didn't do any of it. And it is just stalling Iran, because they know that Iran wants, and Ayatollah Khamenei has made this clear over and over again, that from an Islamic point of view, he does not want nuclear weapons. He doesn't believe that they are a legitimate, Shari necessity of any sort. So he's guaranteed it, but they don't trust that word. And they're going on the basis that Iran, if it's allowed to have any kind of nuclear foothold of a peaceful nature, that would quickly escalate into them having a nuclear weapon. Now, the reality is that the Islamic Republic of Iran controls the Persian Gulf. The reality is that the Islamic Republic of Iran has ballistic missiles, and they have a reach of thousands and thousands of miles. Certainly, they can reach Tel Aviv. Islamic Republic of Iran is technologically advanced enough to be able to give the Americans or anybody else who wants to take them on a real bloody nose. And there's certainly no walk in the park for anybody who wants to go to war with Iran. All of this Israel knows. All of this Britain knows. So what they're all doing is they're just trying to play this game of delaying and dragging and at the same time threatening. And in the run-up, what confidence have they given the Iranian negotiation team by hijacking Iranian oil tankers, or by continuing to station their bases even though they've been told to leave Iraq, by moving into Azerbaijan and using sort of proxy Kurdish forces? Look, they've done everything they can to try and make sure that Iran gets the message that they are their enemies.
Well, there's certain things out there that point to the U.S. That it does want, and even statements that are coming, for example, like the lead negotiator, Rob Malley, saying that, yes, the U.S. is ready for the sanctions to be lifted. But Daniel Lazar, what is the U.S. position here when you take a look at the whole thing coming into the talks, which at this point, the first day, is now over? What approach is the U.S. using with Iran?
Well, I think the U.S. is very weak. It's showing its weakness at every turn. I mean, it's still traumatized after the Afghan debacle. And Biden will do nothing, as far as I can tell, to contradict Israel in Washington. I mean, Israel has an iron grip on U.S. foreign policy, and Biden is afraid to go against that. So the U.S. essentially, what it's done since Biden took office, is to hit Iran with a series of non-nuclear demands that are completely extraneous to the 2015 nuclear accord. To refuse to lift punitive sanctions imposed by Trump until Iran gives way on these non-nuclear demands, which the U.S. knows is impossible. So I think that what the U.S. is doing is trying to put up a brave front. It's trying to talk tough against Iran for fear of contradicting Israel and also Saudi Arabia, I might add, in any way, shape, or form. And therefore, it's dragging these negotiations out to the point where they really are a dead letter. And the problem is at the end of this process lies a growing possibility of a military confrontation. And that was something that JCPOA was intended to avoid. But now it looks like the Biden administration is doing everything it can to make it come true.
Looking at the statements, it's very interesting when you do a history check, say, Mohsen Abbas, about the warnings that have come from Israel on Iran, which in this case now you're having both Israel and the U.K. make this warning: Iran is on its path to obtaining a nuclear bomb. You could go back to the year 2012 when Israel said Iran will be able to build an atomic bomb in 5 years. That was in the year 2012. Back in 2003, Iran closes in on its ability to build a nuclear bomb. And then in 2012, Iran on brink of a nuclear bomb, 6 or 7 months away. This came from the former Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. I mean, it's out there. The record's out there. Who is their audience? Or who are they trying to fool in some sense when Israel in particular has made these types of false statements?
Look, the mainstream media across the world, largely, other than perhaps the Russians and the Chinese, is largely in the pockets of the same money mafia, Zionist money mafias, which are rolling out this kind of nonsense. And the the Western press, and definitely the Anglo-Zionist press over this in this side of the world, is totally following the line that Israel and Tel Aviv send them out. They send the press releases out, and the Western mainstream media just says amen, and they roll out all of this kind of nonsense. And so it's a way of just brainwashing and justifying to the public. The public generally in the West are not really that concerned about foreign policy. They're right now worried about migrants. They're worried about their currencies going down. They're worried about an economic collapse. They're worried about COVID. There's plenty to keep their public here in the West occupied and not really be that concerned about what Israel says or does or what Britain and America say or do to Iran. So they've got a good cover at the moment. If they had to take some kind of action, it's something that would receive, I think, very little pushback from the grassroots. And the politicians, of course, we know that the Israel lobby, the Friends of the Conservative Israel, Friends of Israel in the Conservative Party or the Labour parties here, all of the parties, whether they're Republican, whether they're Democrat, Labour, Tory, go to Germany, anywhere, they're all fundamentally in the pockets of private benefactors who have a strong Zionist leaning, let me put it that way, people in banking world, and of course Israel directly itself. They're all in one team, and none of them have any intention of having any fair attitude towards the Islamic Republic of Iran. Rothschilds began with the Balfour Declaration with the British. The British installed the biggest cancer in West Asia in terms of the violence and the perpetration of conflict and disharmony, and that is a process which they're not letting go of. In this latest agreement, you can see that they're now talking about working together with Israel on cyber issues. So that means cyber warfare is going to be openly collaborated by America, Britain, and the Israelis, which is directly the threat to Iran, which they've been carrying out already. Mm-hmm. Biden suffering from dementia. Many people are just worried about that, but it's what's behind the American establishment or the British establishment. It's the faceless men in corridors of power, women in the corridors of power that have a Zionist leaning that make sure the West will not execute any kind of fair policy in West Asia.
Okay, so final question goes to you, Daniel Azar. We're looking at, obviously, these stocks. First day is over. You have said that you're not optimistic about these stocks bearing any fruit. You have statements that have been made to the lead up to these talks and even currently, especially by Israel, that Iran is advancing its nuclear program, its centrifuges, its fissile material, etc. Do you think those types of statements are meant to set up the general public for confrontation with Iran either through cyber warfare or through military action?
Well, the answer is yes. I mean, the question is what nature that confrontation will take. I mean, are we facing a long, drawn-out, low-grade warfare, or are we facing some kind of more serious, concerted confrontation? It's hard to be sure. The status quo could go on for years with cyber attacks and assassinations, et cetera, as Israel and the West try to wear Iran down. That could go on indefinitely. On the other hand, Israel may at some point declare enough is enough and try to launch some kind of direct military attack. So we can't be sure. But certainly, the Western powers, the U.S. and Britain and Israel, of course, as well, are pulling the rug out from under the 2016 the Vienna talks. And those talks are going nowhere. I've been pessimistic from the start. On this show, I have said repeatedly I did not expect the U.S. to re-enter the nuclear accord, and everything I've said has been confirmed. So I think those talks are dying a slow death. They will never be resuscitated, and Iran is just facing nothing but stepped up hostility from the U.S. and its allies.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for that, Daniel Azar, journalist and author from New York. And Say Mohsen Abbas, thank you, journalist and political commentator there from London. At the top of the hour we had Rob Carter, correspondent from London. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitakway, entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, if you might remember, we talked about Imam Khomeini's recommendations on supporting the oppressed and fighting the oppressors, especially the global arrogance and Zionism. We will continue the discussion in this episode. Stay tuned, please. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, in his testament stresses that one of the main problems of the Islamic countries and oppressed nations are the mercenary regimes of these countries. He believes that these regimes try to keep these nations weak, backward, and dependent. He writes, "At least for the recent 100 years, that the big world-devouring powers gradually put their steps in the Islamic countries and other small countries, we have witnessed or have been told by correct histories that none of the ruling governments in these countries have thought of their nation's freedom, independence, and welfare. Almost all of them have rather been engaged in oppression and suffocation of their nation or have only tried for their vested or group interest, or for the welfare of the wealthy and upper class, and the oppressed slum habiting classes have been denied all life blessings such as water and bread, and those miserable have been employed for the interest of the wealthy and debauchee stratum, or they have been the puppets of big powers, which have employed whatever they can to make countries and nations dependent, and have made countries the markets of the East and the West through different tricks, and have secured their interest, and have raised nations backward and consumers, and they are moving with the same plan. Imam Khomeini writes in his testament, "The misery for Muslims are the governments that are dependent on the East and the West, and I emphatically recommend you not to listen to the propaganda horns of the opponents of Islam and the Islamic Republic, which all try to expel Islam from the scene so that the interests of the superpowers are secured." Imam Khomeini also writes, "O you, the oppressed of the world, and you, the Islamic countries and Muslims of the world, stand up and grasp the right with hands and teeth, and do not be scared of the propaganda ballyhoo of superpowers and their servile stooges, and expel from your countries the criminal rulers who submit your efforts to your enemies. And expel from your countries the criminal rulers who submit your efforts to your enemies. And you and the committed serving classes take the helms of affairs and gather together under the flag of Islam to rise up for defense against the enemies of Islam and the deprived of the world." Imam Khomeini believed that confronting the media hype of the oppressive powers is the main duty of Muslims. He writes, "Today and in the future, what must be important for the Iranian nation and the Muslims of the world is the foiling of the disuniting and destructive propaganda." Elsewhere in his testament, the Imam writes, "I recommend Muslims, particularly the Iranians in the current era, to show reaction against conspiracies, increase their solidarity and unity in any possible way, and disappoint the disbelievers and the hypocrites." Imam Khomeini says, "The prominent ulema and respectable preachers of the Islamic countries should invite governments to free themselves of dependence of big powers and come to mutual understanding with their nation, as, in this way, they will embrace victory. And let them invite nations to unity and refrain from racism, which is opposite to Islam. And let them shake the hands of fraternity with their brothers in faith in any country and from any race, because the great Islam has called them brothers. And if this brotherhood in faith materializes through the efforts of governments and nations with the help of Almighty God, you will see that Muslims will form the greatest power in the world, with the hope of the day on which, God willing, this fraternity and equality will materialize." Imam Khomeini also writes, "I recommend the Islamic nations to take the role model of the Islamic Republic government and the Iranian struggling nation to put the oppressive governments in their place. If they do not capitulate to the will of their nations, the source of misery of Muslims are the governments that are dependent on the East and the West.
From the heart of beautiful Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.